You're listening to Raising Anchor, the Rhode Island FC podcast, now part of the Blazing Musket family. We're glad you're here. Hello and welcome to Raising Anchor, your podcast and source for all things Rhode Island FC. I'm your host, Matt Intrican, coming to you on Thursday, August 1st. August already. RIFC continues its winning ways, earning their third win in a row and climbing up the table to 7th place and tied on points with their next match as they square off against Detroit City FC away. Can this team get it done and get revenge on the loss earlier this season to keep the undefeated streak alive? We're going to find out as Jason Carey joins to preview a very busy 7 days ahead. Jason, how is it going, my friend?
Doing good. Those Pit Vipers get me every time. Maybe we'll have to see if they make, like medical grade ones so I can actually see.
Prescription Pit Vipers?
Yeah, we'll do a dual Pit Viper episode one day, maybe.
I mean, hey, the interesting thing about these is that I have now, like, it's become a running shtick, right? Like, people have said, don't you dare take those off. We were originally going to have USL All Access and USL lead analyst Devin Kerr on tonight, and things didn't work out in the end. So we're going to have him later on in the season for hopefully a really robust postseason playoff preview. But it just didn't work out because of his schedule. He's going to be actually doing the broadcast for the Detroit game. So that's why we wanted to kind of have him on. He had a great interview with Danny Dicchio, the head coach of DCFC, earlier this week. And if you haven't listened to the USL All Access for the week, I highly encourage you to go do that. So I was concerned about wearing these in front of him because, like, that's the penultimate, right? Like, it doesn't get much higher than that on a broadcast partner. And that would have, I may have had to take him off. So the gag continues to run. So we haven't lost because of him. So if we want to put the responsibility of these Pit Vipers, then you know what? That's what it's going to be. But listen, we have a huge show. This one's going to be, there's a lot, and it's not all soccer specific to a stadium, but we do have a lot to talk about today. So we're gonna have to try to go through these news bits as fast as possible. So let's get the easy one out of the way, the low hanging fruit. We're joining goals.tv. So for those of you that know what that is, congratulations, you're ahead of the curve. For those of you scratching your head saying, well, what is goals.tv? Goals.tv is the official content contributor. See, I can't even talk. It's like 5 minutes in. Contributor for the USL to represent Rhode Island FC in their partnership. So they've asked us to be the official content contributor for that. It's an app / site. Depends on kind of how you would consume something like this. They're still getting their feet under them. It's very early in the infancy of the USL coverage. They've really been specializing more on MLS and Liga MX. But their goal is to bring the beautiful game more concentrated to the United States of America with a specific specialization in North American coverage. They're staying away from Europe, from South America, from any other league. They really want to put a spotlight on domestic product. And it's really, I think it's gonna be interesting. It's gonna be a lot of fun. We're joining with other USL contributors like the USL show, and we'll eventually, they've asked us to, for now, move our content into there. So you can still listen. You can still find us on all the normal channels. We're not exclusive to goals, but there will be some exclusive content on their platform in the weeks, months, years to come. So we have some ideas of what we want to do. Have a little bit more fun there for the people that maybe kind of stray off the beaten path. But I mean, listen, more exposure for us, more exposure for the team, more exposure for the league. That's not a bad thing, right?
Yeah. I've been meaning to check them out because I know that, like you said, the USL show is part of it. So I finally kind of went over there and looked at some of the stuff that they're doing. They got some interesting stuff there. A lot of like small to mid-level content creators. Like there was a guy who was just interviewing someone who was transferring to a school and was going to play for the soccer team. There was some young woman who was like vlogging her experience in the TST tournament that happened a month or two ago. And just also like kind of like a little biography thing about her life journey through soccer and whatnot. And then I don't know, for some reason, some guys were talking about like Bukayo Saka, even though like, I guess they don't want to be European. Like it is like almost all exclusively focused on, you know, American soccer.
Right. I mean, sometimes things leak, right? Like you can't only talk. I mean, sometimes some things are going to happen. Like, we're going to end up probably talking about MLS tonight, and we're hashtag not an MLS podcast. I think it's going to be awesome. One of my favorite contributors, people always ask me nowadays, like, who are you listening to? What content are you consuming specific to soccer now? And one of my favorites to get kind of just that, like, interview expose style is Kick a Ball Pod. He's on there. I've mostly been consuming it outside of the goals.tv platform. So excited that we'll be able to join. Maybe there'll be some collaboration there too. Anyways, let's keep going. We got lots of news to get to. Let's get to the most important one. Let's stop talking about us and let's get back to talking about this club. And there's a certain someone who has earned an honor yet again with the USL Team of the Week.
Yeah. So Odarce here is the fifth player of the season to earn the honor twice, joining Jackson Lee, Stephen Turnbull, Jose Quisera, and Albert Diqua, Mr. Chico. The Cuban native played an essential role in head coach Conno Smith's defense that held North Carolina FC scoreless in the second half of Saturday's win, where the Ocean State club would score two unanswered goals to complete the comeback from behind victory. A block shot, four interceptions, and five tackles won by Odarce showcases awareness and defensive capabilities to ensure North Carolina would not gain an advantage in the attacking third. Nodarce's footwork and playmaking abilities were on full display throughout the match, as the defender won a team-leading 11 duels and completed more than 90% of his passes. Odarce also came within inches of breaking the early 0-0 tie in the first half with a powerful close-range header that was blocked by a defender on the goal line in the 22nd minute.
Yeah, Odarce is going to want that goal back because, I mean, well, that non-goal back. I mean,
I think that maybe JJ would want his back more.
we'll talk about that. I think it's great, though, that, you know, when you think about a game like this, you're expecting Doyle, you're expecting Haravo, someone to get on. Because usually, again, it's those attacking contributions. And in games, I didn't check the rest of the league to see if there were clean sheets on the week. But typically, that's where those honors go because there's some sort of defensive masterclass put on the day. The fact that this is a 2-1 comeback win and it's not an attacking player for us, it's a defender that gets the nod. We're going to talk a lot about the defense of this team and then, you know, tonight and for the weeks to come, as that's probably going to be the keystone on how far up the table this team gets. But when you look at just the contributions that came from both ends of the night here, just congratulations to Frank. You know, we asked Coach in the post game, not for Frank, but instead for Zach on last week. And he said, you know, I really don't care about these awards. It's more for the players. If they care, I'll care for them. But, you know, we care about the points. We care about the table standing. We care about the performance on the day. So congratulations to Frank on that. I think he's what the...
Yeah, so he is the 16th Rhode Island FC player in this 2024 season to make the Team of the Week.
Yeah, so congratulations, Frank. Well earned. You know, you're in my starting lineup for the Card Collector app every week, so keep on keeping on for me on that one. I need to get back into the top 10. I missed a couple games, so I fell out by not competing, so I need to get back into that. And I also, Craig, because I know you listen, I'm going to need 7 mulligans again for the 7 misses. That daily login, it gets me. I've got things to do. But let's get into some other things. Attendance, it's on everyone's mind. We're a little over the midway point, but we're now at half of the games played at Burn for the season. And we had some interesting information come out from a rap fan, a listener, Aaron from Providence. But before we get to Aaron's comments, I want to just jump right here into the table for a second and highlight this information now comes from John Morrissey at USL Tactics, as so many important pieces of data do. It used to come from like a Stadium Digest attendance website, but they stopped commissioning that work as of this year. So that's a bit difficult to deal with. However, if you look on the standings now here, you'll see that based on John's data, after those 10 regular season matches, RIFC is currently in 14th with an average home attendance in that 14th ranking out of the 24 teams in the USL. RIFC is averaging about 4,207 reported fans in Burn Stadium at Bryant University, which only seats officially 5,252. You know, we've gotten a couple questions over the game so far. Is it tickets at the turnstile? Is it tickets sold? Does that mean tickets distributed too? Because sometimes we give tickets away to people to come and check out the product. I don't know, because, you know, well, there's speculation that sometimes the ticket scanning doesn't work because of the spotty Wi-Fi all the way up in Smithfield, that, you know, maybe it's, we just have to kind of count the beans as they are and not what actually shows up. I myself don't have an insider knowledge on that. It's just kind of like thinking about the technology and whatnot that it's there. But like when you look at this slide and you look at the data for a first year, you know, everyone's told us keep our expectations low, temper what we think will be good, whether that's attendance, that's performance. What do these numbers tell you, Jason?
I think for the first year, we're doing good, especially because there are people we've come across who are still kind of biding their time and basically waiting for next season, who are like, eh, Smithfield is too far away. They don't want to drive up there. So there's some numbers there that are not related to ours that don't look great. But I think if, like, skipping along to some of the where this conversation is going, like I look at the attendance for this league, and I think we're at a pretty good place. There are a few teams with some concerning numbers. Obviously Miami, we know, is kind of a wash. Las Vegas Lights, I don't know what's going on with them.
Let's get honest, right? These teams that are at the bottom are also historically bad performers. In fact, so much so that I think Hartford Athletic is like the only outlier because they just seem to be gluttons for punishment there. But when you look at these other teams,
if you give away free hot dogs or whatever they're doing.
Hey, it was a dollar. It was a dollar hot, or was it $2 hot dogs and $1 beer? I already forget. No, you're right. Like some of these teams have problems, and then like not every team is going to be a Lou City. Not every team is going to be a New Mexico United. I just say, you know, these are teams that have at least 1 to 3 to some as many as 10 years entrenched in this league, and we are middle of the table. So for a first year performance, I think this is really good.
Yeah.
And so this is where Superfan, Rap Fan, Aaron from Providence kind of points out that there's another piece of data here that isn't getting acknowledged. And I think this is where Rhode Island FC really has to kind of like pick up their bootstraps and shine a little bit brighter here, because they're not giving themselves enough pats on the back. When you look at it by percentage of capacity, RIFC is still in the middle of the pack at 13th with 79.8% capacity. So that's every game that they've sold. All of the ticket averages, that brings us up to 79.8. So we only jump one place in terms of 13th. But then again, that's still per capacity plus the amount of tickets. So when you have a larger venue, you can sell more tickets in theory. When you start to subtract the attendance from the capacity based on the number of empty seats still available at the home match, it's a significant big drop off because RFC comes in 8th place. So basically, if you flip those numbers, right, like if you're punished for having a big stadium that you can't fill, you could still have 7,000 people, but you leave 13,000 seats unsold, right? Now you flip it to a stadium that's only about 5,000 and you're selling 4,000 plus tickets on average. Well, now suddenly the stadium comes in 8th place with only 1,045 empty seats in the building. That's 1,000 seats, which, you know, again, year one, we still run into people all the time that go, what is soccer in Rhode Island? I didn't know that that was a thing. That's an incredible stat to see this early on in the season. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think we're doing really good considering we're filling 80% of the stadium. You talk about how some of these teams play in very large stadiums. Like recently we visited Birmingham. They're only filling 16% of their stadium. But I know that that one fits a ton. North Carolina is an interesting one there because I think their attendance was better in League One, right? Which is kind of sad. I don't know
there's more competition now in the space. So, like, you know, that's fair, too. Quick shout out. And we're going to try to stay on topic. So for those of you commenting, unless we can catch it in the middle of us talking, it's going to be difficult. But that being said, I want to give a shout out to Shadow Wolf in the chat. He's the host of the Fallen Leaves main podcast for the USL One Side Hearts of Pine. And he's got some tremendous interviews with the owner and the president of the league. So even though that's not our team, but they're also not our competition until Open Cup, tremendous interviews. And if you're just soccer hungry for anything in New England soccer right now, highly encourage you giving that a listen. So we're going to move on, though. Some controversy in the last game. And for the Defiance members here tonight, it's a bit of an interesting story. So for those of you that attended the last game at home, you may have noticed that there was a bit of a hiccup maybe at the start of the match. The players walked out. I did the announcing for all the players, said all the names, did all the things and stuff. And then the banners went on the big screen for the American flag and silence. Awkward silence for It may have only been 90 seconds.
Silence is golden.
But no, not at this time. No. Silence that was just, it was so intimidating because we go to have the national anthem sung by a singer from Rhode Island, supposed to be out there, and nobody can find the singer. We start panicking. The control room doesn't know where they are. We have a backup in the booth to play just like the actual instrumental version of the anthem in case there isn't a singer or there's a scratch on the night or something else happens. So you just hear the brass band go, and then you see the you know, the video up on the screen. So we're just sitting there, right? The players realize something's wrong. Everyone in this state, like, I can hear people outside. It's so quiet. They just decide to start doing the player ref handshakes. And then lo and behold, a savior, not just one, but a group of beautiful saviors in the supporter group, Defiant 1636, out of nowhere starts singing a rendition, an a cappella, a little off key, but we're not going to complain, rendition of the Star Spangled Banner. Gets the entire crowd going a little late because they didn't know if like that was the shtick, if like the Defiance was supposed to be singing and they missed their cue. And Defiance sings the entire anthem, saves the day, heroes on the night, every single one of you. So for every Defiance member, pat yourself on the back as well. You are the real heroes of the night. It was not our players in that 2-1 hard-earned victory because it really saved the experience altogether. The technical thing here, like the behind the scenes, is that the person who was going to sing it didn't know where they were supposed to go to line up for their cues, and no one knew where they were, and there was we just didn't know what to do. So they were standing there awkwardly in the audience, in the stands. And like, hey, why is no one doing anything? Like, that's where you were supposed to be in the moment. So lessons were learned. Year one, guys, got to get it out of the way now before Tidewater. But for all of you, thank you that sung. Really appreciate it. There may be an opportunity down the road, but I can't spoil that. But stay tuned on that one for another one in there. So thanks again. But it was really weird to stand up there and everyone going, where is the singer? So
yeah, I saw someone following her with a camera. I think she was... You know, she probably didn't know where she was going, but I think she was maybe a little too concerned with her social media presence instead of trying to, you know, when you do something like that, you should be communicating with people, make sure you're ready, you know where to go before you start.
I'm harassing like the valets, I'm harassing the ticket person, I'm harassing the concession person, like whatever I need, like tell me where I'm supposed to go. And if you don't know, put me in contact. But anyways, don't want to get too far down that learned, that like road. Said, but yeah, you know. it was nevertheless a very... historic moment in the programming of Rhode Island FC. So we move on, we learn. And speaking of moving on, we've got something else that needs to get moved on to, and that's or across and over, and that's the new Pawtucket Bridge. We've got a pedestrian bridge. We talked about it a couple weeks ago. Governor McKee was walking around with us at the Tide... Well, he wasn't walking with us. We were walking next to him at the Tidewater Stadium, and he just kind of said, oh yeah, it's on us. It's on Mayor Grebian and myself to get that bridge done before the end of the first season, which was an interesting timeline. Don't know if they'll make that, but Pawtucket, they figured it out. They now have an action plan here, and we got an official press release from the city that was reported by Ethan Shorey and The Breeze. So can you walk us through what was said?
Yeah. So city officials have awarded an engineering contract to Beta Group of Lincoln to design public amenities adjacent to the Tidewater Landing Soccer Stadium development. The $1.4 million design contract was awarded through a publicly bid selection process and will be funded through a U.S. Environmental Protection Agency Southeast New England Program grant of $284,000. A grant from the Rhode Island Infrastructure Bank Municipal Infrastructure Grant Program for $350,000 and a Rhode Island State Bond specifically designed for Tidewater Landing public infrastructure improvements of $766,000. As construction of Tidewater Stadium continues, we are thrilled to begin the next phase of the project, said Mayor Donald Grebian in a statement. While development continues, we have remained committed to prioritizing green space and public riverfront access. This Riverwalk pedestrian bridge will allow us to improve walkability in Pawtucket, providing an east-to-west connection for residents to access Tidewater Landing. Construction is anticipated to begin next year. The project is currently in the engineering and design phase.
So a couple of things that I think that are important to take away from that. One, we're in the design phase. So that money is just to design the bridge. And for anyone that's remembering the Providence pedestrian bridge where the what was it, the 195, where 195 originally went, and then they built the pedestrian bridge in its place, that bridge was supposed to be $3 million, and it came into a cool $22 million right at the end of its completion for a human foot bridge. Like, not car, not heavy load, just a human foot bridge. So my concern with the way things are kind of going in this state is that we are going to see a massive amount of expanded or inflated numbers to that. Hopefully that doesn't damage Rhode Island FC's brand, and they start to try to associate that, like, oh, this is the soccer stadium wanting more. To be completely clear, these are completely separate things. Like, we want the bridge there so that we can take advantage of it, but if it doesn't happen, like, we're still okay. So this is completely in the hands of the Don, aka Mr. Grevian, and Governor McKee as well. So that also being said, the bridge is going over the Seekonk River. I said my piece. We're not going any further in it, but it does say the Seekonk River in that programming.
Opening up more river wars.
Speaking of wars and on bodies of water.
Speaking of infrastructure, have you heard about the stadium that's supposed to go up in Everett?
No, I haven't, because last time I checked, there isn't one.
More
going
like
up in
Neverett. I stole that from Tom Quinlan on New England Soccer Weekly.
Well, I mean, Neverett's been around for a bit, but he's definitely laying it on thick right now. He's kind of putting a positive spin on it, too, of, you know, like, hey, this is a blessing in disguise, but also find another place to build the stadium right away. I got a little bit of a mixed signal from him, because it was like, go find another place in Boston where you want it, or just build it next to Gillette in Foxborough. So, I don't know, kind of weird. We put up a post today. It was very neutral, because to me, like, you know, whether you're a fan of the Revolution or not, it does not matter. Soccer specific stadiums are critical to the infrastructure of enjoying good soccer in this country. And it's important that every team in every league gets access to the right facilities. And I don't want to disparage the Revolution in that way, because they're not in our firing lane, right? Like, they're not in our swim lane.
Yeah, I'm just joking, but like, I want all soccer teams to have their own, at least ones of certain size, right? That they should have their own soccer specific stadium.
Yeah. And so, I mean, and you saw the people, it was polarizing, because they played so long in not even the suburbs, like the sticks of Massachusetts, so to speak. Some people are really excited about that, because like, they're only 30 minutes, 40 minutes away, but you know, Boston suddenly is an hour and change, and it's a toll. It's finding parking and paying for parking. So like, there are, I see the arguments on both sides. I'm just more of the aspect that like, I hate when anyone doesn't get what they want. And right now the Revs wanted to have that stadium there. So I hope they can figure that out.
But yeah, to tie this back to RAFC real quick, did you see recently that RAFC legend Jack Paniotu scored his first goal for the Revs?
That's the segue we're going to make. Do we even... So Jack, I sent him a message. He thanked me. I'm really happy for him. And I'm really happy that he's been able to take a silver lining of whatever is going on the organizational table of this Revolution team right now. And he's able to find that opportunity right there. Cause that's what players wait for, right? They wait for an injury. They wait for like spontaneous combustion, and they go for it. And he's definitely showing that. He's been showing that game after game. And now he's got that goal. The only thing I don't like about it is it's Leagues Cup. I'm very anti Leagues Cup. I wish he had scored it in the regular season.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, it was right time, right place. He did his job. Really good job for Jack. Can't wait to see him grow with the team.
Yeah, real quick. So Tom from New England Soccer Weekly thinks that at some point Jack will come back. And I was kind of thinking about it. If their whole team is healthy, unless he like immediately transforms into a superstar, I mean, there's potential there that he's still not polished enough to maybe transfer to a first team. So I don't know, maybe it's possible. What do you think? I mean, like, maybe not. Wow, this
really,
year, right?
We're really going into like, not an MLS podcast here. Listen, here's the reality. Okay, the Revolution are jettisoning all of their big dollar contracts. They have faith in some very younger people making performances to save the day. This team has declared they are not going to do anything other than start the rebuild phase. So to me, with all the injuries they have, and with all of the need for this generation, because they're about to hit this generation swing, right? This generation change where the next group of under 23s need to kind of step in and fight for those substitution minutes, those extra time minutes. this is the next 4 months are the most important months of Jack Panayotu's career. And yes, I know it's August, so that would be December. What I'm saying is that any minute he can get on a professional pitch is going to cement his ability to move up and advance his career in MLS, or it's going to kind of bring him down. And I think he's got the caliber and the skills to be an MLS player. This is the time where he gets significant minutes for the rest of the season. You don't need the player like Emma Boateng. If it's between Emma Boateng and Jack Panayotu, which I know they don't play the same position, but like if you had to choose which one, you already know what you're getting out of Emma. What does the table result matter? Like, this is why Pro Rel is such an important conversation, because like there's no punishment now. You can just experiment. You can do the chop and change. Jack Panayotu should just basically get a start for the rest of the season, and then they use that as a calibration decision to say like, what's your future as we rebuild to Caleb Porter's vision in 2025. So like I don't see it any other way. I don't see him coming back to RIFC unless he has such a terrible season but still shows those flash in the pan moments of brilliance. I just don't see him coming back.
Okay, that's fair.
You made me get on my hot, really hot takes of the New England Revolution. Wasn't ready for that tonight. Let's stop talking about
the
Revs.
I wanted it to just be about Jack, not about them.
But that's the problem, right? They're hand in hand. You know, like it's like when you start talking about Tico down with Tampa Bay, he's having a great USL season. Does that earn him a nod back to the Revolution? Don't know. But let's get back to our team, RIFC, Rhode Island FC, the boys in amber and blue, and... reading these comments and let's get through this recap against North Carolina FC. What a game. I think personally the most important game we've played all season. I think that for a couple of different reasons, but before we get into that, let's talk the formations. Let's talk how we got the first wrong Wednesday right. So we got do we have to cancel the hashtag? I don't know. We did it though. We finally got it right.
I mean, if we take it over a whole season, statistically we're still mostly wrong. But yeah, so we saw basically what another unchanged lineup here. Koke, Net, Nodarse, Yao, and Stoneman in the back. Quisera, Ibarra, Fusan, Holstad, and Turnbull in the midfield with Williams and Chico up top.
Hey, listen, we may have gotten it right simply by the mechanics of we just copied the homework from the last week. But next week's going to need some rotation. So if we do get a two-peat here, if we get the repeat, next Wednesday's is going to be very special. We're talking like...
best two out of three.
We're talking massive substitution changes here. Clinical changes. So let's get into this game, right? Lots to unpack here. It's kind of that, like, you know, we looked good, then we fell flat, then we didn't look good, then we rallied. I think the best way to sum it up is in the post-game interview. Coach himself, the game was not pretty. And that is a very accurate, if not maybe statistical way of talking about this game. But I do think this game was one of the most important we've played all season. And it's not, let me repeat, it's not because of the 6-point spread that we separated from North Carolina, or I guess five, because they were only 1 point and then the 3-3. So wait, does that make it eight? That's 8 points then. 8-point spread. But that's not why. It's also not because it was the first 3-game win streak that Coach Cano and the team have ever chained together. And it's also not because we're still tied in second for the lowest number of losses on the season, which is an important stat when we talk about that defense. Second time I'm bringing it up. So pay attention, everyone. This was the first comeback win, as this name of this episode is listed. This was important because we have not, and let me repeat, we have not come from behind and gotten the W. We've tied. We've had last minute thriller equalizations, but we have not yet in the season been able to rally and complete and close out a game where we were chasing. We've dominated games, we've shown really poorly in games, and we've drawn some games, but we have never come from behind. And that's important because that's that level of grit that players, that squads need to have, especially when it gets into the, you know, the knockout rounds of a playoff postseason, where like you can't write this off because it's the 55th minute and you're down two. Like, you've got to win it now. And that's exactly what this team did in incredible fashion.
Well, yeah, that's just like the coach said in the scrum afterwards, and even a few of the players were like, hey, if this game were earlier on in the season, that result might not have happened. So it shows the team's growth.
Yeah, it would have been a draw king special, 100%, which is what we did earlier this season. So let's get into this. Let's first talk about the first half troubles, because there were quite a few. We started strong. We did show those early moments of like, okay, we're going to take command of this game. And then suddenly, maybe not so much. We see a goal, which we warned the listeners, North Carolina, sneaky team. They just get these like early goals and like everyone always gets caught like unsurprised or unaware. And then suddenly North Carolina goes up in the first or the second half and they do this again. Like it was like I predicted it, like Nostradamus. So my question to you to start things off here, a lot of questions after the game. Should Koke Vegas stop that goal?
I don't think so. I know a lot of people like to have brought that up because maybe they're still butthurt about, you know, Lee not being in the net. But if you look at that goal, especially you look from the angle too, from behind the net, I mean, he volleys that to the bottom corner with a lot of venom there. There's not much he could do. We try and make a pass forward. We lose the ball in the midfield. It's what, two passes and a volley. So it was just kind of a transition goal from them.
Yeah. And I mean, like also too, you can see, and sometimes people think it's a keeper freezing. We thought that with the Birmingham game when it was the line of sight was blocked, but also too, sometimes keepers, they cheat or they're on the wrong weight of their foot when the goal goes a direction they don't think. So looking at it, you can see Koke is ready to go.
He's starting to move. And then by the time he's like in motion, it's already in the back of the net.
Right.
It's too late.
Well, I think it's because he was shifting too. Like, I think he didn't think it was going near post and he was ready to cover, you know, the other side of the goal where he thought the cross was coming through. At the time I was upset because we gave up a goal, not early, but early enough. It was like the 35th minute. But it was just one of those like, okay, well, now that we've done this, what is going to happen? Because we knew that if North Carolina got that goal, they were going to low block, park the bus and bunker. And we're not a team that does a good job of usually picking the lock to get those goals against a team that's set defensively low and defensively tight. So that was the first piece. The other one that I kind of noticed, you know, tough night for Turnbull. He got subbed out early. We don't usually see that kind of level of performance. Defensively, I think he was great, but he was definitely not getting the ball into dangerous areas. His crossing was a little off. What did you think? Like, that was kind of like the only thing I saw in the first half. It was like Turnbull's not really activating like he normally does.
I think it was fine. North Carolina was kind of like leaning to their right there. So he was getting in a lot of open space down his right flank. But yeah, that final pass was missing defensively and everything else. He was making interceptions. He was combining with people, but it was just that final like cross or pass. Part of that too could just be a testament to North Carolina's defense. They were just making it hard for him. I mean, when did we ultimate finally score? Like 75th minute. So I mean, like, you know, we're not, the team has gotten better about possessing the ball and breaking a team down. But that's not our strength, right? So we saw another match here where we did have the lion's share of possession. I think the first half was 61 point something percent possession. So they were saying, hey, you know, just have the ball, try and break us down. And then we'll, you know, like they did, catch you on a transition or a set piece or something like that.
Right. And we did struggle, right? In the first half, we didn't have a shot on target. And I think that's also because probably you said it early in the episode, but who wants it back more? JJ Williams with that missed deflection, like redirect, or the Air Frank just not getting it on target? Who's more frustrated with themselves after that?
I think JJ probably wishes he could have, you know, angled his foot a little differently there, because I think that would have gone in. With Frank, it was just there was too many bodies in the way, right? Like, if he knew in retrospect, maybe he could have tried to direct it somewhere else. But a lot of times that's difficult when you're jumping up there in the air, like scrapping for the ball. There's only so much you can do there.
I mean, it hurt my card collector up, but that's a different story. The only other thing I'll say is, and you kind of brought this up, so I'm gonna throw this question back to you here in a second, is while we did have the goal scored on us, I still thought, and you were the first one to catch this, we looked a lot better in terms of shape. Like we saw communication. We saw things that this team was not capable of in the first half of the year. The one that comes to my mind is where Frank misread a 50-50 in the air and he undercut it. And he knew he had already taken too many steps and the ball was going to get behind him. And the North Carolina, I think it was Mikey Maldonado, was going to have an open like run to the goal. And Frank communicated to Karifa, and he said, I can't get to this now. I need you to step up and body Maldonado and make sure that this doesn't get past us. 3 months ago, when we were still Draw Kings, that would have been a miscommunication, and that would have probably been a goal for Maldonado. I think this team is really starting to show those moments where they understand where each other are going to be. They understand their positioning more now than ever, as they've really taken this 3-5-2 to heart. Walk me through, like, what were your impressions as you were watching the game from the box?
Yeah, there were times where we were kind of pointing little, like you said, little plays out to each other, where when we talk about this being a very important match for the team, because we really saw their growth on display here. Like you said, we saw a lot of communication between the team. We saw like the team held its shape very well, which sometimes they've struggled at. The back line has gotten really good about covering for each other. There are numerous times when, you know, like you said, either Karifa or Grant or Nodarce maybe is like, you know, not going to get to a ball. They're kind of shuffling around to make sure that they're cleaning up. And I mean, even Koke, who's, I swear, was like playing at the midfield sometimes.
I mean, there was that one where he dribbled up and we thought he was going to cross the halfway line. I was like, do it. Just do it for the memes.
Yeah. And one of those times, actually, he controls the ball. He passes it to Grant. And Grant immediately plays it into JJ, who then takes a shot that was actually on frame.
That was a great shot. Yeah.
And like, if anyone needs an example of why you do this, that's exactly why, right? Because your goalkeeper immediately starts an attack and you don't lose possession.
Right. So coach goes into the locker room at the half. We're down 1-0. He Friday night lights him, and he just says all the inspiration things or all the swearing things. I'd love to know what a Coach Cano, you know, mid-game conversation at halftime is.
Like, didn't we ask Zach Harifo, but he's like, I don't know. I was warming up.
Dumbest question I've asked of the season so far. Walk me through what was the conversation at halftime. Well, Matt, I was stretching and getting ready to come in the second half out on the pitch. Dang it.
Hey, you were working, you know, reading off your ads there.
So. Yeah, that's true. That's
and
true.
I was just like hanging out talking to the other guy. So
game changers. We have some incredible substitutions come on in the second half, earlier than I think we weren't sure. Like, does coach let this team try to get one back on their own without the substitutions? And he starts flipping the script in the 60 minute plus very early on. First, we have Mark Doyle come on. Then we have Zach Harivo come on. And wouldn't you know it, they become the most important pieces to be added to the board on the night. So our Doyle rules? I think that's what we have to say.
Of course. Yeah, so in the second half here, North Carolina started off pretty strong, right? That let's say till the 55th minute, they were kind of dominating possession, creating a few chances. After that, before coach made the changes, the team kind of started to get into the game, control the ball more. Coach makes the changes, and then we create a chance there. Deke was over there kind of in the corner, controls the ball, is strong, and moves it up to the top. Stoneman rifles the ball off the crossbar, and Doyle's there to pick up the scraps, and we're tied.
Yeah, I actually didn't know Stoneman could shoot. I was thinking, have we seen that?
Center backs actually usually have like a really good shot.
Oh yeah, no.
They're booting the ball constantly.
My favorite long range specialist was Vincent Kompany with Man City. Whether you like the team or not, you can't deny the man. Like, the things he could do from, you know, almost the halfway line. I just wasn't expected. Like, when the ball came in, I thought it was Holstead because it was that top right corner. And it's like, oh, Holstead's trying to Holstead. And no. Grant Stoneman was like, hey, what if I tried to do that? And Doyle was in the right place, picks up the ricochet, puts it in. Coach said afterwards that's not luck. That's Mark Doyle reading the room, reading the positioning, understanding where he needs to be to pick up those third goal opportunities to score. And score he did. It's his second official goal of the season. I kind of thought about that for a second. I'm like, how is it only his second goal? His first coming at the June 2nd game against Hartford Athletic. And then I realized in my heart, my mind, I'm still giving him the own goal credit for New Mexico United in the home opener. So, I mean, do you give him that credit?
Yeah, definitely.
Right.
I think this is another example of the team's growth. I think earlier on in the season, players maybe wouldn't have been like making that run, kind of, you know, trying to continue the play. It's almost like someone would take a shot and they'd all just watch it and they're like, ah, oh, dang, he missed it. And then like reset instead of like, how do I keep going forward? How do I continue this attack? How do I get that second ball, create another chance, that like kind of fight?
Right. And so then, you know, he scores the goal and that contributes to the eighth goal via substitutes in the USL Championship this season. We were third place at the time. We bumped to second, tied for second on that eighth goal. And then Zach Harrow was like, well, what if we just pump that stat one more up and I'm going to score a goal as well as a substitute, bringing us to now 9 goals. So we're only behind Sacramento Republic, who has 10 substitution scored goals on the season. You can't hate this team right now.
It's crazy how many stats were just on the cusp. I mean, some of them are not great stats, but I mean, hey, I'll take it.
I mean, stats tell the truth and stats can lie all the same. So, hey, I want to ask you a question. So moving on to Zach, congratulations to Doyle on that goal. Well-deserved, well-earned. Can't think of a nicer guy. We heard a new nickname, and this is an internal one. So this isn't something we came up with. This isn't credit to us. But there's a nickname for a duo in the field. So I'm going to ask you, there's now a pairing nickname for Isaac Anking and Zach Haravo. Do you want to take any guesses?
I don't know. Local lads.
Ooh, love the alliteration. No, it's the Flow Bros. So
nice.
You're hearing it here first, Raising Anchor exclusive. There's a nickname floating around for them called the Flow Bros. Now, here's the thing I don't know. I don't know if the Flow Bros is like they come on together. They have like good like interchange with the soccer play and they're just flowing. I don't know if they've got secret rap skills I don't know if it's that they got flowing like luscious hair because they both have good sets of hair on their heads.
I bet so, it's all of the above.
It should be, right? So henceforth, and this is just we heard it like random happenstance, Flow Bros. So congratulations, Isaac and Zach, on a Rhode Island FC first there as well. But let's get into Zach himself. Zach continues, like I said, in that substitution scoring way after he sees a beautifully weighted pass from Noah Fusan, who he gives full credit to Fusan in the post game interview. Fusan himself now at 5 assists on the season, back in first place on that contribution, not in total goal contribution, but 5 in terms of total assists on the season. Ball falls right to Zach's feet and Zach fires it in for a very difficult goal. Again, like we just keep like saying XG, you know, who needs XG? We're going to score any way possible in the most difficult circumstances. And you're just going to be really impressed with the quality of our play. We even asked Zach, right? We said, like, hey, like, what is going on with your goal scoring here all of a sudden? We've scored 21 goals now in 7 games. Again, multiple goals scored per game. 2 is a minimum, but we had a run of games where it was 3. And when we asked Zach, like, he's like, hey, you know, I don't really know. I can't give you any reason why. He thanked God, and he was really appreciative. But he did say a really good comment. It's probably one of my favorite comments of the year, and that Coach Cano's built a team and that this team was built to score goals. And you can't hate on a comment like that.
Yeah, so Zach's played 4 games this season for RFC and scored 3 goals. This is his highest ever single season goal return. 3 goals have come in the last 2 games. Before that, 4 goals in 99 matches in the USL Championship.
I mean, he even said it himself. He joked about his brace and like how he already beat his records for every other season. So he's very well aware that he is more of a holding midfielder, defensive minded, and he's just up to the task of whatever coach is asking of him, especially with that personal connection. Let's get into the controversy on the night, right? So we have got the highlights. We got the highs. Let's get into the lowest of lows. Was that the worst yellow card you've ever seen on Jorge Quisera?
Probably. I mean, you know, I've been watching soccer for a long time now. There's probably one worse that I've seen, but that's probably the worst yellow card I've ever seen live in person.
I mean, to walk people, if you weren't watching the game, and maybe the ESPN, the NESN broadcast didn't have it, 64th minute, the ref pulls Quisera and Schaff Brewer over because they had been kind of scuffling up and down the pitch, and says, like, hey, you guys all need to chill. A minute later, Quisera's back on the attack, going up that left lane. Brewer cannot contain Quisera. Brewer falls down after tripping over himself. We all saw it. We all saw it. There's no contact. Quisera just broke his ankles. He fell down, and Quisera's off to the races. Unmarked freedom, right up into the box. And remember, we're down a goal. We're losing this game. Mark Doyle has not scored yet. Zach Herbo has not scored yet. Quisera's off to the races. We've got numbers in the box. That's a goal. I can't say for sure, but I'm pretty sure that would have been a goal. And the ref blows the whistle, stopping the play. Now, we don't know at the time, in the moment, if that's a foul on Quisera. We don't know if it's a foul on Brewer. But we see Jojea, who knows that he didn't touch him, who knows that this is just Brewer going down. Jojea is furious. He's freaking out. The yellow card comes out, and it is not for simulation. It's not for a foul from Quisera. It's not a foul from Brewer. It's not for falling down. It is for dissent, because Jojea went, he went crazy. I don't blame him. As the entire stadium, Jason, all in one moment, lost their minds. Like, the stadium was livid. It's the loudest I've ever heard it, and not for a good reason.
Do you know it officially went down as dissent?
It officially is in the book as dissent.
Okay. Yeah, I thought that he was just trying to give him a yellow, maybe to calm him down. Not that I think that's right at all. North Carolina was playing a bit of a physical game on the night. You know, we're no strangers to ourselves from that. Not to say that it was dirty or anything. I just think that they were kind of getting up in everyone's faces, making sure their presence was known. And I think actually besides this, like, I think the ref was fine. Like, this was like a really bad call on the night. But I was thinking, I think he kind of let the game flow outside of this. I can't think of any other. There's one like weird thing that kind of happened 10 minutes before, but I forgot because we won. Like, what it was, maybe like some sort of like play on or something that should have been called offside.
There was a player that got hurt on North Carolina's side, and he stayed down, but it was the player's own doing. And so they were like, well, no, Rhode Island FC has the possession, so the game's going to continue on. And I think it took like 5 minutes before, like, he, but the ball never came back. It was an attacker who didn't contribute to defense.
But outside of that, you know, we criticize the refs when they have bad games, but we never give them props when they have good games. And I won't say he had a great game because of this one call. But outside of that, like, I can't point to anything else that was bad. We've had a lot worse refs.
And here's the thing. I don't disagree with you, but when you make a mistake of that magnitude, it can have dramatic impact to the game. I mean, you're talking everything from the fan experience to the performance on the pitch to sports betting. I mean, there's a reason things like VAR exist today, and I'm not advocating for VAR, but selfishly, what I would like to see happen, and I hope for those from the league office that listen, because a couple of them do, this is the same organization that gets the refs ready for MLS, USL, every other amateur, like everything where there's a paid ref in the pro umbrella, like this is the same organization. I think there at least needs to be accountability when a play is that bad of a call. I think there needs to be accountability where we can send a pool reporter question to the ref's room, into their locker room, and get a response before the end of the night of like, why did you call that? Walk us through it. So at least help us understand, maybe you saw something that we didn't, because when you have fans leave like that way, it gives them a nasty taste. And I think USL Pro, the pro organization, excuse me, I think they want to be taken serious. Well, you have to have accountability. You have to have transparency there. Nobody knows what happened with that ref on that call. We don't have the story. We don't have the permission to go ask. So like, USL, if you want to be serious about this, and since we can't invest in things like goal line technology and VAR, right or wrong, at least give us access to the refs to challenge those, because then when they know that they have to explain their actions, they may be thinking a little bit more different about how they hold themselves accountable when they call those kinds of things on the field at the end of the day. But selfishly, I just want to know, what did he see? What did the rest of 4,000 people see that he didn't see, or vice versa? Because like that can kill. If we did not score and we lost that game 1-0 and we blame it on that. I mean, you can never blame it on a ref in a single moment in time, but like it's easy for casual fans to go, oh, that ref sucks. The quality of professionalism in this league isn't good enough. Like, I don't want to come back to this. Like that can have devastating consequences. So I'm just leaving it at that. But we did ask coach after the game.
Off the record.
Because they get fined for things like this when they criticize the league or the referees in a public setting. So he, you know, we knew we couldn't ask him in front of the cameras. We asked if he'd take the bite and, you know, look at us and he wouldn't answer. But let's just say his body language. I'm not an expert. Jason, maybe you're an expert. His body language kind of said that maybe that was the worst call. And again, not his words. I need to be very clear on the record here. He did not say anything. But maybe his body language said that was the most ridiculous thing he'd ever seen.
Yeah, he didn't actually say any words. It was just nonverbal communication. And I think he looked very frustrated. I mean, ultimately they won, so he wasn't
a happy man just being brought up to a very bad memory, recent bad memory, yeah. So, all right, let's get into this. Let's get into the table standings. We are running behind, and we need to still cover a whole other game. So let's get going. Table standings, hit me.
All right, RIFC is now on a 6-10-4 record, yielding 28 points with a +3 goal difference, putting us in 7th place, tied with 6th place because Detroit has more wins currently, though.
So I don't want to do the rival watch tonight because I wanted to talk to Devin Kerr about this, but they were talking a lot about team records this week on USL Access, and they were talking about what playoff teams need under their belt to make it all the way through the playoffs and become champions. And they were talking, it was really interesting. They were talking about the quality of wins and how it's so important. There's a lot of teams in this league that people beat up and take those points. You know, each conference seems to have those one or two teams that are good to get 6 total points on the season for. And that can kind of inflate some of the numbers. What no one's really talking about yet as we start to not lock in, but, you know, cement some of the positions within the playoff standings are teams beating the really good teams that are above the table? And that was one of the questions that was talked about with Tampa, but mostly they were focusing on some teams out in the West. So I took that kind of aperture and I applied it to Rhode Island FC, and only with teams that were above the playoff line as of this recording. And it was kind of interesting because they were focusing on, are teams grabbing points or are they losing? And when you look at that from that perspective, Rhode Island FC has won 9 points from playoff-bound teams. So they've won 3 games so far of their 5, and 3 of those teams were playoff contenders. All of them actually were top-tier playoff teams, too, at that. We've had 7 draws. So 7 points have been smash and grabs or just holding it down at home against playoff teams. So we've gotten 7 points drawn and 9 points on the win column, but we've also lost 9 points against playoff teams. Now, I told you earlier, we have only 4 losses on the year, which is good because those are all, we're tied for 2nd in the lowest number. There's quite a few teams that only have 4 losses so far, but we've lost to Colorado, Tampa, and Detroit City FC. So it's important in those games. We're not going to see Colorado again, but it's important for Tampa and Detroit that we can show up and at least get 1 point or all 3. If we're really going to prove that we have what it takes to not only advance up the table, but to also get into that playoff berth that we want and then make it as far into that as we can. So this Detroit game is going to be more important than I think we realized initially.
Yeah. For Detroit here, they seem to be slipping a bit here, as they currently sit tied with us at 28 points ahead because of those, the wins. They've got a game in hand. Currently at an 8-4-7 record, but they're winless in their last 5 games. The week started off rough for them of their double dose of New England soccer after a lackluster performance saw the team lose to Hartford Athletic 1-0.
You know, I wonder if Detroit's the first club that has to face both New England teams in the same week. I think it is. So it'll be interesting. Detroit has, this was the fascinating part of the interview with Devin Kerr. Detroit has a really rough schedule coming up ahead. They've got 8 games in 29 days, and a majority of the teams they're playing against are playoff contenders. Some of them, the ones that are getting hot at, like, good times for them, but bad time for Detroit to start kind of going the other direction. So, like, Las Vegas Lights, guess what, everyone? We won when they were, you know, quote-unquote a bad team. They're a very good team now. They're in, I think, fifth place, and they are marching up the table. They're playing against us, where last time we played them, we were in 10th place, right? Now we are tied with them in that seventh potential sixth spot. If the advantages go our way, by the way, on the weekend, we could get as far as fifth place. So that is wild that we could jump the table that much, depending on if a couple of other games go the way we would hope. That game in the hand, they had two, they had three before. Those are all getting now caught up in this game cycle of 29 days, eight games. So I don't think that's going to do them any favors. We're going to find out by the end of August if they are above us or below us. But like any advantage they had, it's all going to be found out on the pitch at this point.
Yeah, in that US All Access show, Devin and DK were talking about how these summer months sometimes can define a team. Right, you can see sometimes teams who are struggling a little bit, maybe they're just there, if they can come out on the other side of the summer months and put themselves in a good position for playoffs, like they can take the momentum into the postseason.
Right. So let's get into the formation. No surprises here. 3-5-2. Jason, you want to read it off?
All right. So we're thinking Vegas and net. No Darce, Yao, and Stoneman in that back line. Quisera, Ibarra, Fusan, Holstad, and Turnbull in the mid, with Williams and Chico up top.
Listeners,
if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Well, this is going to be the last run of it, right? Because they have to do some rotation for the midweek game next week against Indy. So for listeners, I think everyone would agree that this is right, unless coach needs to do some like early 4D chess mechanics that we're not aware of. Question to those that are paying attention along on all of our different socials right now, who or what positions, what players do you think need to get a start next game, just to give people who like kind of run themselves ragged or they're going to need the break for Hartford. They just can't go that many minutes over the next 7 days. Who do we think are some of the players that absolutely have to get a lock on start for Wednesday? And do you just rotate the entire 11? Cause we have so much depth. So many people are healthy right now. We could do it almost a completely different team. We'd still have to use the subs, but let's just go through it. We could do Alves, Messer, Chumesi, Smith as a back four, Lee in net if you wanted to do that. You could do Connor McGlynn and Zach Caravo in like a six pairing back line. You could then do I'm blanking here all of a sudden. Kevin Vang and Mark Doyle up front. I got that. And then the two wingers would be
Isaac Anking in there somewhere. Yep. Make it some sort of variation of a 4-3-3.
Exactly. And you basically have it set. So like you almost have a whole nother team you can feel. You could put Kevin Ordoy in. And he said, by the way, he wants Kevin to get some minutes before the end of the year. So that would be a fun thing to have happen. So anyone following along, if you've got ideas, throw it in the chat. But let's get into... Oh, and speaking of, by the way, people not available. I don't know why the ortho injury report listed all of those players as not available last week. That wasn't the case. Like there may be day-to-day at this point, but all of them can get back in with the exception of Amos. So that may have just been like throwing the enemies off. So we just ruined that surprise for anyone listening to this podcast. But every single one of those players is doing full running, full training practices at this point. So I'll confirm it next week at the Hartford practice ahead of the game, but these players are ready to go.
I noticed those players didn't dress though.
Well, I saw them. 18.
So I don't know what, maybe it was some sort of miscommunication. Or like you said, maybe it's intentional to throw off our enemies.
Right. So let's get into Detroit. This is going to be interesting because Detroit is, they're changing things up, right? There's so much going on wrong for them right now that they're in a place right now that they need to either experiment, or because they have some new additions that have come in that they need to kind of get to a different place. So they've moved from a 3-5-2 themselves, or sorry, not a 3-5-2, that was us, a 4-2-3-1 into the gentleman's classic 4-4-2. I'm not sure yet if that's because of Sedania coming on from the Oakland Roots as a recent transfer, but this is what they played last week, and for all intent and purpose, we should be seeing this again. So you're going to see Steinwasher in that goalkeeper position with Villanueva, Emumunsa, Carroll, and Williams in that back four, and then you're going to see. Not Williams. He's in the middle. Sheldon. I can't read today. Then you're going to see newcomer Sedania in that left midfielder role with Murphy and Ryan Williams not to be confused with Reese Williams, and Diop in that midfield four. And then you're going to see striker Ben Morris, and he's listed as a winger, but Maxi Rodriguez, who scored on us last time, you're going to see them in that 4-4-2 pairing. This is whether this is how they do it or this is just more chop and change for coach Danny Dicchio, I don't know. But 4-4-2, we haven't played against a 4-4-2 yet this season, at least a traditional one. I went back and checked. You're thinking, and I know we have not yet done that. So this could be really interesting. This is a team that's desperate, and I mean desperate for a goal at home. So it's really going to be kind of a big shocker to see what happens on the night.
Yeah, maybe he's going back to his English roots, back from his time at West Brom.
You stole my joke before I could make it. So let's get into this on how they're playing their games. Like we mentioned, this team's not doing well, but they are tied with us on points, which means they've been doing well at some point in the season. And I looked back at the bunches of games that they've had good and maybe the bunches of games that they've had bad. This team is super, super streaky. Detroit City has failed to win their last five games, like you mentioned earlier, but they had an equally long winless streak earlier this season from April 28th to June 2nd. So they've had periods of time where they haven't been able to string together performances. And what's been kind of coupling in the middle are these just dunks on like teams like Miami FC, El Paso Locomotive, Las Vegas Lights earlier on. So, or not Las Vegas, sorry, just El Paso. So they're winning against teams that they can punch down on, but they're not stringing together a lot of performances against the bigger teams. And you've seen that in kind of the performances on the day. But the bigger problem that Detroit City FC is having right now is they're having a scoring issue, and it's a big one. They've only strung together multiple goals in 7 of their 18 matches. These are a lot of 1-0 biters, 1-1 draws, 0-0 games. They are not scoring in bunches a lot. They've only scored 2 games where they've scored above a brace on the night for the team. And that's a problem when you have, in my opinion, that's a problem when you have 5 strikers in your bench. Like, they have 5 forwards on their team, and only Ben Morris of the striker core is seeing regular minutes. There's some substitutions that are happening, but for a team that has that much depth in that position, you'd think you'd see a different formation.
It's the English heritage. I mean, look at the English national team. They can't score either.
Maybe. But, you know, speaking of not scoring, though, they haven't scored in their last 2 matches consecutively, and they haven't scored in their last 2 consecutive home matches. So 2 different stats there, but they're having scoring problems altogether. The only person that I really even, by the way, am worried about off the bench is Elvis Amo. But he hasn't really been able to do much because he joined the squad late after returning from injury, and he hasn't really found consistency yet. We can talk about Hartford, which I don't want to, but we can. They didn't even have a shot on target in the first half against Hartford. Against NCFC, they couldn't break down a team where they had an 11th man advantage for what, 85 minutes of regular play? 85 minutes that they could not break down North Carolina. There was a 5th minute red card against North Carolina's Ezra Armstrong, who we didn't see in our game, and Detroit couldn't figure out how to score against them. And we went and did that. I mean, not with relative ease. There was definitely that Zach Haravo magic that happened, but this team is just not capable of scoring. That being said, when they do score, it is beautiful. Okay, I went back. I almost forgot. I went back and rewatched the goal against Rhode Island FC. The first goal. It's beautiful. It's everything you want in a perfect sequence. They get past Turnbull on the defense. It's a give and go. It cuts lines, comes back across the box, and then it's across the other direction to an open Maxi Rodriguez in the back corner for a little tap in. Like, it's 5-6 sequences, and it's a goal, and it starts from them building it out of the back. So like, this team can score amazingly. Their second goal, I forgot how bad it was. It was a really bad Koke Vegas giveaway where he tried to just distribute it way out. Like, he kicked it wide, he kicked it high, but it just came to a running Detroit City FC player. I think it was like Matt Yancey, I think is his name, or Yanez, Matt Yanez. And he just had the momentum. He collected the ball perfectly, and he just was in front of Koke within seconds. And it's like, oh man, this is, I forgot about that.
I was trying to forget about that one.
It was tough. It was tough. So this team has some streaks in it, but it's not consistent. Where this team shines and where everyone's paying close attention to Detroit, it's their defense. like I said, they've only lost twice at home this season, and the teams they're losing against are all playoff teams. They just happen to also mostly only be beating teams below the playoff line, with the exception of Hartford. So they're losing against Lou City, Indy, Birmingham, and Orange County Soccer Club. But the weird thing, too, is that when they do lose, they lose in spectacular fashion. That's usually like multiple goal games. So it's like when they lose the plot, that's kind of where things, the brakes get beat off of them, so to speak. So with a staunch defense, a solid build-up play for attack, Rhode Island FC is going to have to trust in their transition style of play. They got to see that if they can, if their defense can hold the line here to grab these points in Michigan. But I will say this too, and this is where I want to end it before we get into the quick players to watch. Fair credit to Rhode Island FC here. This is a completely changed team. And I don't just mean because we're on this performance run. I mean, literally, the last time we played them, this was the total recall. So Jack Paniotu, we had found a day before, was not going to be in this squad. He was going back to Revs, right? So, like, think about what you worked on all week. You'd seen what Jack contributed to in those first three games. You knew what you were going to do. Jack's out. This was also JJ Williams' first start. And, like, he'd only played two other games with substitution minutes. And he was partnered against Prince Sadie because Chico was in like the worst moment of his run of form. We also had Stephen Turnbull out on the left back side of things for this game. And it was not this team that is gelled and is firing on all cylinders. So this is going to be definitely a transitional team that we're going to see what happens here.
Yeah. So just a few players here to watch out. Like we mentioned last time and we talked about earlier, Maxi Rodriguez, attacking midfielder. 7 goals and 3 assists. Since we've last played them, he's added 4 goals to his tally, one of those being against us. A bit of a fan favorite from the Detroit fans. He puts into some defensive actions off the ball too. Like, you know, he is a very good player. Another one here, Michael Bryant, joint highest rated player in FOTMOB with Maxi Rodriguez. He's actually in the back line too. Like you mentioned, that they are a very staunch defensive team. He's mostly a right back, but he's been playing some center back minutes as well. He's great in the air, winning the majority of his aerial duels, as well as great on the ground as well, completing tons of interceptions and tackles.
Yeah. So, I mean, with that, the only real wild card here that we haven't talked about is this Jaciel Sendiano. It's been a day. With this transfer recently from Detroit, for Detroit City FC, on Monday, it acquired attacking midfielder Cedeño from the Oakland Roots. Really weird move. And at first, I didn't understand it, but then I kind of saw what was happening.
There's a lot of moves that have been going on today, too.
Yes.
It's Wild West out there.
It is. It's almost like it's a transfer deadline. Cedeño made 80 appearances in the championship since making his debut for the New York Red Bulls 2 in 2019. He joined the Roots after he played for Hartford Athletic last June and recorded 4 goals, 2 assists, and 52 chances in 42 appearances for Oakland. This is a guy who he's the most productive when he has support. He's playing out on this outside wing, which is what I didn't expect. He's supposed to be more of like an attacking, like third option to run into the box, like not a cam, but like someone who has the freedom and
like
creativity.
A right forward or left forward.
Yeah. And so I don't know if this is a position where they see Cedeño kind of shining or if this is just a position of need because Dicchio wants to do the 4-4-2. I'm not sold that this is good yet. What I did see in his early stats against Hartford, a team that he's somewhat familiar with. I know that they've had a lot of transformation themselves. He loses the ball a lot. Like his duels was the worst. He did not convert any. And his possession lost was the highest for Detroit City against Hartford. So he was trying things, which is, you know, credit to him, but he was not succeeding in that. So he was costing Detroit City a lot of turnover and transition when he was getting stripped of the ball. So the good news is he has some weapons, but I don't know if that's going to be enough.
Well, good news for them, not for us. Yeah, like you said, it's that final third passing that he's got there. But like you said, he loses the ball a lot. So it's kind of hard to tell whether or not we need to be too afraid of him. But I'd be more concerned about Maxi Rodriguez, honestly.
Yeah, Maxi, if there's going to be a player that finds a way to get a goal past Coke Vegas on the weekend, it's going to be Maxi Rodriguez. So let's get into this. What are the key elements that Rhode Island FC has to do to get right in this game?
So as we saw this past weekend, RFC continues to suffer from somewhat self-inflicted wounds, right? That goal we gave away, while not to say that it was someone's fault for stopping it, but it was a bad pass out from the back. And not trying to get ahead of myself, but, you know, as we try to cement our position to thinking about the postseason, like these kind of game management opportunities that we have, stuff like this, trying to come from behind, which we saw a great character from the team, but you don't want to put yourself in that position, because it's not sustainable to think that, oh, even, hey, if we fall behind, we know that we have the character to fight back. It's good that we do, but you don't want to let the other team in the game by being sloppy. So I think that the team needs to continue to play the way that they are, but they kind of need to, in the back of their mind, try and work on those like lapses of judgment that they still seem to have here and there.
And I think that's important too, when they look at the playoff picture, right? They can't have those mistakes and then let points get dropped or losses become reality. So the more that they can avoid them, the better off they'll be. I really think that for Rhode Island FC to do anything on this game, they're going to have to do two things. One, they're going to have to take it directly to Detroit City FC, and they're going to have to figure out how to counter. Detroit doesn't have a low block per se, but they do. They're comfortable with building out of the back. They're comfortable with that build-up play. That's how we saw them do it against other teams. So it reminds me kind of actually most recently of this North Carolina game, where once North Carolina went up, they just kind of bunkered. I imagine Detroit is going to be defense first in their approach, which would show how the scoreboard has looked over the season for them. And so for this to happen, they're going to have to be okay with not having the ball. But that also means they're going to have to try to absorb and stop that build-up play attack. And they got to keep their noses clean right now. They got to make sure that they can stand up, rise to the occasion, and hold the line. And to do that, you know, the most important thing is Rhode Island FC has to score first in this game. While this comeback win was really important, Detroit City historically struggles if they're not the first to score and they're not in control. That first goal doesn't have to come 10 minutes in. It can come in the 60th minute with a Noah Fusan special. The goal can come from a super sub. That seems to be our thing. So 60th minute plus, that's fine. But they have to be able to hold this team to 0-0 up until they score the first goal. I think that's going to be important on the night for them to get any points in Detroit. And from everything we've heard, this test is going to be big for them, because it's not just CBS, but it's also the environment. We've heard that between the Northern Guard, there's trains right outside the pitch that are like loud and going off. We've been told by Coach Cano directly that this is a tough place. This is a tough environment to play in. It's almost second to none. And so I think, like, just like thinking like the Northern Guard, and like they sit right there in the middle so they can heckle the players like 24/7 versus being right behind one of the goals. I think this is going to be a tough place to play. And my only kind of aspiration here is that if we can grab 5 goals in Louisville, which is supposed to be like another fortress, we can do it here. And I think the boys can keep the streak alive. I don't know about a win. I'd like to see a win. I want revenge. Personally, I want revenge on this club because of all of the shade they threw at the Defiant supporters group and all of the problems they tried to start on social posts after that game. So just because they took it personal, I want to take it personal as well. I don't know if they have it in them, but what I do know is that Rhode Island FC is going to have to score first to take all 3 points. At least that's what I'm kind of seeing based on the performance of these teams.
Yeah, that makes sense. As we get into these score predictions, I got one right again.
You got one completely right. Yeah. So you've now jumped 10 points to my 7. Don't like it. I actually
don't
hate
worry,
it.
You'll catch up.
Well, here's the thing. I don't know if I will, because if my prediction, like, again, I'm very, what's the word, superstitious, right? So like the Pit Vipers, I have habits, like borderline OCD habits. So I may have to sabotage myself for the good of the team. And what's really bad is that I finally told you what we're playing for, which is going to be for the final game.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that.
The loser has to dye their beard blue, potentially yellow too, but at least blue, and go to the game. And I want to not have to look like that. I want to punish you for it. So I'm not happy about this. And I may have to continue my superstitious ways, even if I don't believe in the result. And that's a problem for me. But before you jump into your predictions, I do want to share... I pulled both of Detroit City's predictions for the week. 52% of fans thought that Detroit was going to get the win against Hartford. Now it's only 45% of fans think they're going to get the home win against Rhode Island FC. 38% think that Rhode Island FC is going to get the outcome, which is incredible considering it's the first time ever in Detroit. And then about 20% are looking at that DraftKings special. So you won the round. You tell me what's going on first here.
So USL games on CBS have a lot of goals. So I'm thinking 2-2, a draw. I think it's going to be tough for them. And I think they, because of their bad run of form, they're really going to try and come out and, you know, show their fans what kind of team they are. So yeah, I want the win, but I think that we'll keep the streak alive, but I think we'll get a draw here. 2-2.
So I want to say a win just because I feel like this team can do it. I feel like they're hungry enough, and I feel like Detroit's in such a bad form, but like I kind of thought they would win against Hartford. And so now maybe like that rallying cry needs to come at home, and maybe we're the example to be set. I'm going to say 1-1 for the superstitious reasons. I think Detroit is very good defensively. We don't see a lot of goals for and against on normal, especially at home in Detroit, if it's not in their favor. A lot of teams don't come in and smash on them. So I'm thinking this may be a low goal scoring affair. But like you said, Devin Kerr, USL All Access, every CBS game this year has been a 5-2 result. So as long as it's 5-2 us, I'll take a 5-2. I want a 5-2 win. Yeah. I want the Louisville special delivered.
Get that goal difference
to Detroit, yes. But I'm thinking it's going to be 1-1. The Hillside prediction, by the way, he's not in on the painting of the beard, but he's more than welcome to. We may give him some passes, but he's at a 2-2 prediction as well. So our quant is saying 2-2. Listen, let's get into these questions. Rapid fire them into. I loaded them into the actual into the stream so we can read them directly from the stream now if you want, but you've got the notes too, so let's get these questions ready to go.
All right, so Brandon here wants to know, what celebrity with ties to Rhode Island, born and raised in the Ocean State, moved here when they were young, came for college, gravitated to Little Rhodey later in life, should we be plying with RAFC closing in order to turn them into a walking, talking, amber and bay blue billboard for a club, and what should be their signature item?
So this is difficult because I had this like really bad epiphany where in the chat when it was asked, he asked about Tom Selleck. He got a throwback to that. And Tom Selleck as my father in my Magnum PI glory here, that took me back. So, that being said, like I saw some names like James Wood. I'm pretty sure everyone hates James Wood right now in Rhode Island because of some things he was doing down in Narragansett with like zoning privileges and like paying back taxes. So I'm not really sure how that would go. And so like, I feel like this is cheating because like it was listed in like some of the options, but I'm a huge Viola Davis fan. And so for me, like it's either Viola Davis or I want to go kidnap Bill Murray he lives on Martha's Vineyard, kidnap him, relocate him to Block Island so we can get the RI street cred. And then I want it to be a jumpsuit, a full Ghostbuster jumpsuit, Rhode Island FC special. That's what I want. That has to be the answer.
I'm not really a celebrity person. You know, the Jesse Leach, the main singer of Killswitch Engage, is from Providence. So I don't know. We can get him an RAFC hat. You know,
I like how you go for the hard. You don't go for like the easy toss-ups like Seth MacFarlane, you know, like,
you know, get the metalhead, get him a hat.
I will say this. He's not, I don't, okay. If I had to give an answer that was truly authentic, I don't think a lot of people know this name, but I would say Keith Apicary. He is he's most remembered as the dancing guy in his underwear. He did a bunch of dancing like promos for World Wrestling Federation. He was like the Woonsocket guy.
Oh yeah. I've seen a few of those videos.
Yeah. He went on like America's Got Talent, and he does like actual YouTube comedic content, and he does some film production too. I don't know if he's popular enough, but if I had to, I'd go Keith Apicary. All right. Question for you. Matthew Jean writes in, with this team playing well, what do you think would be a successful season at this point, making the playoffs or a deep run in the playoffs? So not the position, not the berth, but what is a successful season? Just getting in?
I think just getting in will be successful. As this team continues to raise the bar, though, I'm starting to get back those kind of early season or preseason hype that we had, where like we keep winning, we keep getting results, and I keep thinking, when am I just going to say, oh yeah, this team's just going to smash everyone? I don't know when that's going to happen. You know, I was kind of thinking, hey, we get one of those 6 to 8 place, but if we keep picking up wins and results, hey, maybe a home playoff berth, and maybe, you know, make it at least to the next round.
I think we just have to get in. I think that it's going to be very difficult to get the fourth place one, which maybe, you know, like we're not very, the point difference is 6 points, but I think the pedigree of the teams, like Indy 11 will be this really weird proving ground of, do you try to go for the 6-pointer against Indy because it gets you into a better striking position for the fourth position in that home
go
berth
for the draw, or the draw Kings,
or do you go for the win against Hartford? I think you're fighting two things here. I think you're fighting the optics, and you need the win at heart against Hartford more than you need a win. But I want both. But like, it's tough. I think you just have to get people to want to come to games right now, and I don't know that an away win, a single away performance, win or lose, is going to touch the souls of Rhode Island FC casuals like seeing a game at home be won. I think if I were to answer right now, a successful season is we never lose again at home.
Yeah.
So
I think that would be good.
All right. And then we got one more question from Tim here.
All right. With majority of USL contracts being single season, which player on this year's roster would you approach to re-sign early? Is there a current player you would sign to a multi-year contract?
Clay Holstead, if he's not already on one. I think we've talked about this before. We're trying to get the contracts to divulge, right? We're trying to get the multi-years at least confirmed, so we know we want to kind of unpack that by the end of the year of like, hey, like what are the opportunities, like what roster reconstruction needs to look like. I think the only one that, if Clay is not on, Clay's like the one I signed after the indirect free goal kick, or indirect free kick that led to a goal. He's the first one I would have picked up and signed. I think maybe like Noah Fusan as well. But after that, I'm
Frank Nadarce.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Because with how good he's doing too, even if you don't keep him, you could end up selling him, you know, for quite a bit of money.
No, I love all of those.
And he's kind of young too, right? Like 24, 25.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I love all of those. All right, let's get these events done. Let's get us out of here.
All right. So RIFC will travel away to Detroit City FC on Saturday, August 3rd at 4 p.m. This is the big game on CVS Prime. The official watch party for that game will be at the 78 Pub in Johnston. And Defiant 1636 members, there is a big ask to attend the guild, but that has been moved, actually.
Yeah,
because there's projected some rain on Saturday, so they're trying to see if they can get enough people to come tomorrow or so today,
Friday,
actually.
Friday night, if you're listening to this on Friday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Friday at 6 p.m.
But if you want to just watch the game, go to the guild and watch the game and
Saturday,
hang out with the Defiance
4 p.m.
group. But yeah, if you want to help with the TIFO construction now at this point, it's going to have to be tomorrow on August 2nd at 6 p.m. at the Guild. So if you have the ability to, we encourage anyone and everyone, even if you're not a Defiance member and you're just a fan of the club and you want to help out with something really important, come on by and dress messy, because it's going to get a little crazy. Then RIFC continues their away travels as they take on Indy 11 in a midweek brawl on Wednesday, August 7th at 7 p.m. on ESPN+. And then, of course, we'll be at the Guild for that one as well. So come join Defiance or us, as we'll be there. Hey, this isn't actually as long of a podcast as we thought it would be. So look at us, getting one done in under 1 hour and 30 minutes. We should pat ourselves. We've been doing a lot of patting on people's backs tonight. Let's pat ourselves on the back a little bit there too. So always a pleasure getting to record with you on these Thursday nights. For anyone, as Jason's going to read us out in a second, we always continue your love, your support. Had a lot of fun running into people over the last week. To the person I ran into on the East Bay bike path as I walked my dog, I'm so sorry I don't remember who you were. Please come and introduce yourself. And if you have introduced yourself to me in the past, please remember that I have a terrible memory. So, but everyone that's given us words of encouragement, positivity, we appreciate, we love you all. Continue to make sure that you like, follow, share, tell your friends, tell your family, subscribe. What other power words am I missing here to help support the pod?
The YouTube thing is like, comment, and subscribe.
Oh, we're YouTubers now. I forgot.
And now a word for my sponsor.
We got to add the Goals TV into that too. But yeah, let's get out of here.
All right, guys. Make sure to check out our friends over at the Blazing Musket for all your New England soccer coverage, including RFC at theblazingmusket.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Threads, and TikTok at RAFC Podcast, Instagram at Raising Anchor, and there's that website, www.raisinganchorpodcast.com.
Hey, buddy, Anchor's up, and can't wait to see everyone at the Guild either tomorrow night or for the game on Detroit.
Yeah, Anchor's up, buddy.
CBS Prime, let's go.